And now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Thank you, Scott Van Dusen, the sterling invitation one more time. Obviously, I have to start tonight with the acknowledgement of the passing of Aretha Franklin, who passed away early this morning at her home in Detroit. The Queen of Soul, right? She was 76, and according to family members, the cause was pancreatic cancer. I'm not very good at acknowledging someone as famous, I guess is the only word here, as Aretha Franklin. But I just want to quote, out of my respect for her and her music, what John Perelis wrote, part of it, for her obituary online in the New York Times this morning. Here's what John wrote. In her indelible late 1960s hits, Miss Franklin brought the righteous fervor of gospel music to secular songs that were about much more than romance. Hits like Do Right, Woman, Do Right, Man. Think. You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. Chain of Fools. They all defined a modern female archetype, sensual and strong, long-suffering but ultimately indomitable, loving, but not to be taken for granted. When Miss Franklin sang Respect, the Otis Redding song that became her signature, it was never just about how a woman wanted to be greeted by a spouse coming home from work. It was a demand for equality and freedom and a harbinger of feminism carried by a voice that would accept nothing less. Miss Franklin had a grandly celebrated career. She placed more than 100 singles in the Billboard charts, including 17 top 10 pop singles and 20 number one R&B hits. She received 18 competitive Grammy Awards, along with a Lifetime Achievement Award in 1994, and she was the first woman inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987, its second year. She sang at the inauguration of Barack Obama in 2009, at pre-inauguration concerts for Jimmy Carter in 1977 and Bill Clinton in 1993, and at both the Democratic National Convention and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral in 1968. Succeeding generations of R&B singers, among them Natalie Cole, Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, Alicia Keys, openly emulated her. When Rolling Stone magazine put Miss Franklin at the top of its 2010 list of the 100 greatest singers of all time, Mary Blige paid tribute thus, quote, Aretha is a gift from God. When it comes to expressing yourself through song, there is no one who can touch her. She is the reason why women want to sing, end quote. There was a time when I used to, just for the sheer hell of it, I'd meet somebody new if I was in a different part of the country from where I was born. And I would say, yeah, I'm from Toledo, Ohio. And if I got a blank look, I'd say, well, it's a suburb of Detroit where Aretha Franklin was born. Shitty boom. If you opened up your New York Times this morning and went to the editorial page, you saw something that was referenced last night on MSNBC. I think I heard Lawrence O'Donnell mention it, and I think I heard a couple other hosts mention it, that it was coming. What happened? There was a coordinated effort among newspapers around the country to categorically state the importance of a free press. No, I never thought I would live to see the necessity of newspapers doing such a thing. I mean, this is the United States of America, right? Oh, I've had my share of criticism of the press. Hell yes. But you'll notice in most newspapers, they have a section every day where they make the corrections for the mistakes that they made the previous publication day or the previous edition that carried the mistake. And they do this because they're reporting on the human condition. That's all newspapers report on. I don't care what the topic is or what the subject or they're reporting on the human condition. And when you do that, you're occasionally going to make mistakes. Knowing that, the newspaper editorial boards started a number of years ago. I don't remember when. It seems like it has been there forever. I don't think it has. But they started publishing addendum and errata or whatever it's called. You know, here are the mistakes we made with the last publication, and here are the corrected facts. To watch Trump attack what he calls the lying media, the lying press, it's staggering. I mean, it's just goddamn staggering. I don't know where we have wound up in this country that we allow this animal, to use his term, to continue. Now I know how he got there. He got there because enough people voted for this monster. And enough help was given by the fascist Russian Vladimir Putin that the electoral vote could be manipulated to the point where this thing, Donald Trump, wound up as president. I don't know if we're going to survive it. So here in this first hour, I'm going to share with you what some of the newspapers around the country had in their morning editions. But first, an introduction from the New York Times editorial board. They write, in 1787, the year the Constitution was adopted, Thomas Jefferson famously wrote to a friend, quote, "Were it left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter." End quote. That's how I felt before he became president anyway. 20 years later, after enduring the oversight of the press from inside the White House, he was less sure of its value. He wrote this, quote, "Nothing can now be believed which is seen in a newspaper. Truth itself becomes suspicious by being put into that polluted vehicle." End quote. Whoa. Now, Jefferson's discomfort was and remains understandable. Reporting the news in an open society is an enterprise laced with conflict. His discomfort also illustrates the need for the right he helped enshrine. As the founders believed from their own experience, a well-informed public is best equipped to root out corruption and, over the long haul, promote liberty and justice. The Supreme Court said in 1964, quote, public discussion is a political duty. That discussion, the court went on, must be, quote, uninhibited, robust, and wide open, and may well include vehement, caustic, and sometimes unpleasantly sharp attacks on government and public officials, end quote. In 2018, some of the most damaging attacks are coming from government officials, criticizing the news media for underplaying or overplaying stories, for getting something wrong, is entirely right. News reporters and editors are human and make mistakes. Correcting them is core to our job. But insisting that truths you don't like are fake news is dangerous to the lifeblood of democracy. And calling journalists the enemy of the people is dangerous, period. These attacks on the press are particularly threatening to journalists in nations with a less secure rule of law and to smaller publications in the United States already buffeted by the industry's economic crisis. And yet, the journalists at those papers continue to do the hard work of asking questions and telling the stories that you otherwise wouldn't hear. Consider the San Luis Obispo Tribune in California, which wrote about the death of a jail inmate who was restrained for 46 hours. The account in that newspaper forced the county to change how it treats mentally ill prisoners. Answering a call last week from the Boston Globe, the Times is joining hundreds of newspapers, from large metro area dailies to small local weeklies, to remind readers of the value of America's free press. These editorials, some of which we've excerpted, together affirm a fundamental American institution. If you haven't already, please subscribe to your local papers. Praise them when you think they've done a good job and criticize them when you think they could do better. We're all in this together. Now, that's the lead in to a lengthy, lengthy list of comments from newspapers around the country. A synopsis of this region, the South, sizing up the South Alabama, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. The so-called Region 3 leadership, including in South Carolina, Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, believes it is, that's SPJ, is the Society of Professional Journalists. The Society believes it is equally important for local news outlets to repudiate the onslaught of hostility toward the press. We must stand firm with our brothers and sisters in journalism as a family, supporting our First Amendment right to report accurately on our government. From The Atlantic, quote, we know where attacks on the media can lead. When politicians have questioned the rights and legitimacy of the press, violence has frequently followed, end quote. The Van Buren County Democrat in Clinton, Arkansas, quote, and of all the reactions to enemy of the people, the one most overpowering is disappointment. Words, after all, matter, a point we prove every week, and those words from the pulpit are unacceptable and utterly, utterly wrong. the pulpit being Trump. From the Idlewild Town Crier in Idlewild, California, quote, "A person who blasts reliable news sources as fake when they prove him wrong on an issue, or when it reveals his self-contradictions or his ignorance, or whenever he simply doesn't like it, is denying reality." From the Mercury News and East Bay Times in San Jose, California, quote, "Journalists are trying to do a job. We're not trying to tear down our nation. We're trying to strengthen it. For we believe in the foundational premise behind the First Amendment, that our nation is stronger if its people are informed." From the San Diego Union-Tribune, "Distrust is not easy to dismantle. But journalists at the San Diego Union-Tribune and nationwide will keep advocating for a free and fair press with this president and the next and the next and the next and all who follow." The Tribune in San Luis Obispo, California, quote, "It's reporter Nick Wilson writing about a 76-year-old man in need of a kidney transplant who didn't expect to survive the 5-year wait for an organ donation. Thanks to Nick's story, an anonymous donor stepped up within a month and donated a kidney." From the Southern California News Group, "Words have power, and none so much here in the United States as the words of a president." The Ferndale Enterprise in Ferndale, California, "The fake news mantra is not unique to our current so-called commander-in-chief. In this small town, we've heard it for years, as has any other small town editor in remote locations around our great nation. For the most part, we've been amused by the desperation of those who echo it." The Denver Post, "We are simply standing up for what we believe in as journalists." The Hartford Courant in Hartford, Connecticut, "We're at high school football games, at zoning hearings, and the latest show so that we can help you decide if it's worth going. And when the unthinkable happens and 6-year-olds are gunned down at schools, we wrestle with our own shock and grief while telling a stunned state the story. Doesn't sound like the nefarious work of enemies of the American people. Sounds like people who care about the community where they own homes, pay taxes, send their kids to school, who believe simply that truth can help us all lead better lives." From the Center for Public Integrity in Washington, D.C., "Fair, rigorous criticism of the press is welcome and expected, but attacks labeling it as the end of the people or dangerous and sick are neither appropriate nor responsible." From the Lakeville Journal and the Millertown News in Falls Village, Connecticut, and Millerton, New York, "Americans may not like the news they see or hear, but they should not hold that against those who report it. In short, don't shoot the messenger." The Sun Sentinel in Deerfield Beach, Florida, "Our country's leader shouldn't be making it easier for dictators to harass and silence journalists in places where freedom of the press remains a dream." From the Tampa Bay Times in St. Pete, Florida, "In such a toxic environment, Trump's declarations undermine not just journalists and news organizations, but the communities and democracy we endeavor to serve." The Highlands News Sun in Sebring, Florida, "That dynamic tension between the press and politicians is part of the long-held democratic vision of America, going back to our founding fathers." The Boise Weekly from Boise, Idaho, There is nobility, selflessness, and even greatness in people from Boston to Boise and beyond. But the current climate of divisiveness, stoked by a rash leader, has eroded some trust in one another and quite possibly eroded trust in ourselves. Chicago Sun-Times. Chicago is a better city today, decades later, for that constant competition between these two quality news companies that, for all their differences, sure do give a damn about the people. And that refers to the Chicago Tribune, the competing newspaper in Chicago. They write, "At some point, such verbal assault encourages ideological extremists to take action. It threatens journalists' personal safety, and it undercuts that responsibility for a press that's supposedly free of government control to act as a watchdog on public officials." From the Daily Herald in Arlington Heights, Illinois. "The press in America is no blend of disparate tastes and interests into one singular identifiable amalgamation. It is a vast, diversified collection of distinct voices serving specific interests and communities. This is the very nature of democracy." The Rockford Register Star in Rockford, Illinois. "No one likes to get complaints, but yours show us that you care about what we do and what we don't." The Connersville News Examiner, the Courier Times, and the Shelbyville News in Indiana. "If you believe, as we do, that having accurate information is the key to making good decisions, then you should subscribe to newspapers. As our teachers used to say in current events classes, read newspapers. Get your news from many different sources, but among the most trustworthy are your local newspapers." From the Francisville Tribune in Francisville, Indiana. "Even as a small family-owned newspaper, we have a platform to express our issues with the phrase, enemy of the people. That's just not the case. We've never been and never will be. We are here to report the facts." The News and Tribune in Jeffersonville, Indiana. "The fallout from Trump's media blitzkrieg is being felt in newsrooms across America, including this one. The negative comments have reached our ears. Some dismiss us out of hand as if we were more annoyance than a partner in the community. We remain committed, though, to delivering the news of the day without sanitation and information that, but for our efforts, would elude public scrutiny." The Des Moines Register. "The true enemies of the people and democracy are those who try to suffocate truth by vilifying and demonizing the messenger. The response to that cannot be silence." The Topeka Capital Journal in Topeka, Kansas. "We're not separate from the public. We are the public. We live and work and play in Topeka and surrounding areas. We go to restaurants and send our children to school. We drive the same roads, see the same doctors. We're not the enemy of the people. We are the people." The Times Tribune in Corbin, Kentucky. "Our leaders, be they presidents of the nation or of the city council, do not get to choose to whom they are accountable. They are accountable to the citizenry. We intend to hold them to it. To do anything less is dereliction of our duty." The Bangor Daily News from Bangor, Maine. "Facts matter, but they don't make themselves known. They don't actually speak for themselves. They need people such as journalists or yourselves to say them out loud. The Berkshire Eagle in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Mr. Trump's behavior has placed the American experiment in democracy in unprecedentedly perilous times, and a free press has become more central to our nation's survival than ever. Boston Globe. The liberty of the press is essential to the security of freedom, wrote John Adams. For more than two centuries, this foundational American principle has protected journalists at home and served as a model for free nations abroad. Today, it is under serious threat. And it sends an alarming signal to despots from Ankara, Turkey, to Moscow, from Beijing to Baghdad, that journalists can be treated as a domestic enemy. The Cape Cod Times in Hyannis, Massachusetts. The true enemy of any democracy is ignorance. And the only way to battle ignorance is through the acquisition of knowledge, a single set of well-researched, incontrovertible, unbiased facts. The Daily Free Press in Boston. Even when Trump's term ends, the effects of his rhetoric is a stain that has bled through onto these hardworking people and will be difficult to scrub away. The Daily Hampshire Gazette from Northampton, Massachusetts. While the climate is unsettling, it has not deterred us from our job explaining often complex issues that challenge us so that you, our readers, stay engaged with your communities and make a difference with your actions. The Nantucket Inquirer and the Mirror in Nantucket, Massachusetts. Every Thursday morning, after the week's paper is out on the newsstands, reporters and editors meet in the newsroom to plan coverage for the next issue. We strive to reflect a range of interests in the community. We look at the social fabric of our island and what is tearing at its edges. We take our mission very seriously. You should too. The Sun Chronicle in North Attleboro, Massachusetts. This newspaper has felt the sting of the president's disdain. A reporter covering a high school graduation was sitting with families in the grandstand and revealed her occupation. She was told, "Oh, we don't like you." Like all responsible journalists, our reporter was there to gather facts and tell a story. The Wellesley Report from Wellesley, Massachusetts. As you already know, nothing much happens in Wellesley. That's why you moved here and love it. That's why you read the newspaper, to have this knowledge confirmed and to bear witness to our daily documentation of, well, the dailiness of a quiet community. The Whitman-Hanson Express and the Plimpton-Halifax Express from Hanson, Massachusetts. We work together, however, in our unflinching support of the First Amendment and its guarantee of a free press as the best protection of our basic freedoms and status as a democratic republic. That's why it is our First Amendment. The St. Ignace News and the Mackinac Island Town Crier in St. Ignace and Mackinac Island, Michigan. In some respects, we're lucky that we serve an aging population of readers who learned about the fundamentals of democracy and freedom remote from the distractions of the Internet. Many of our readers know better than to believe the bitter message about the press from our president and the occasional other politician, bureaucrat, or partisan. from the Swift County Monitor News in Benson, Minnesota. We live in a time when people can't tell real news from fake news on the internet. They are easily misled, fooled by Russians posting information that incites hatreds and inflames passions in efforts to affect our election. We live in a so-called post-truth world where facts that challenge our beliefs are dismissed. Duluth News Tribune in Duluth, Minnesota. Considered a call to stop lumping together as the media, both legitimate news gatherers and those who practice propaganda. Propaganda meant to mislead and misinform for self-serving purposes. From the Columbian Progress in Columbia, Mississippi. Oliver Emmerich, a conservative Mississippian who founded the company that has owned this newspaper for decades, understood more than most the danger of championing a free and independent press. During the tumultuous summer of 1963, the KKK burned crosses at his home and newspaper office, the Enterprise Journal in Macomb, Mississippi. The paper's response was a simple yet courageous and effective one: publish stories about that domestic terrorism, the KKK, on its front page, the very thing the attackers meant to prevent from happening. Kansas City Star, Kansas City, Missouri. That 44% of Republicans polled recently said Trump should have the autocrat's power to shut down news outlets shows how successful his efforts have already been. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Trump is inflicting massive and perhaps irreparable damage to democracy with these attacks. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle in Bozeman, Montana. In our work as journalists, our first loyalty is to you. Our work is guided by a set of principles that demand objectivity, independence, open-mindedness, and a pursuit of the truth. The Omaha World Herald in Omaha, Nebraska. History has demonstrated time and again the importance of journalism in shining a light on government and explaining key issues confronting communities and our nation. From the Seward County Independent, the Milford Times, and the Wilbur Republican in Seward, Milford, and Wilbur, Nebraska. On bitter cold January nights were the people's eyes and ears at town, village, and school board meetings. We tell the stories of our communities, from the fun of a county fair to the despair of a family to the despair a family faces when a loved one is killed. From the Arizona Daily Star in Tucson, Arizona. At a practical level, we journalists sit through boring government meetings and learn about public school financing formulas so you don't have to. It's not as lofty a statement as the First Amendment, but it serves. From the Examiner Media in Putnam and Westchester counties in New York. Citizens from across the country of all political stripes must stand against the systematic attacks on journalism and journalists. Our democracy's ability to breathe healthily depends on it. From Johnson Newspaper Corporation, Northern New York. The president wants his supporters to conclude that what they're learning from media outlets isn't real. Don't trust your eyes and ears, he tells them. Believe me. Well, someone who has Mr. Trump's history of lying can't be taken at his word on this. The Chronicle Express in Penn Yan, New York. Our work is a labor of love because we love our country and believe we are playing a vital role in our democracy. From the Journal News in White Plains, New York. We can only hope that officials across the lower Hudson Valley, some of whom have prickly relations with the media, will not decide to take the easy way out by tarring journalists as enemies. From the Queens Courier and Ridgewood Times in Queens, New York. Who will bring attention to the problems we experience every day if the press isn't there to report it? Who will hold government accountable for inaction, corruption, or poor decisions if the press isn't there to shed light on them? And from the Committee to Protect Journalists in New York, press freedom is enshrined in the First Amendment and is the bedrock of American democracy. What is less understood is that adherence to these principles has a profound impact on press freedom and the rights of journalists all over the world. When American leaders stand up for a free press, they embolden courageous journalists who put their lives and liberty on the line to report the news. And when American leaders fall short, they embolden the autocrats who seek to repress those journalists. From the Gaston Gazette in Gastonia, North Carolina. When objective news sources are drowned out, the people are left with sycophants and hucksters who ingratiate themselves and mislead. Thus, democracy suffers. An ignorant people is easy to oppress and exploit. From the Star News in Wilmington, North Carolina. Yes, members of the press occasionally get facts wrong. When they do, they are held accountable by their news organizations as well as others in the industry. And far more often than not, the error is acknowledged in the form of a timely correction. The same cannot be said about this president. The Hazen Star in Garrison, North Dakota. Asking hard questions is not fake news. Challenging the basic assumptions of the political right and left is not fake news. Looking at the broader issues that lie beneath the day-to-day skirmishes of our national dialogue is not fake news. It just goes on and on. On and on. Yellow Springs News in Yellow Springs, Ohio. At a time when we should be working with our communities to reform media, we find ourselves having to defend the very idea of a free press. Instead of using this space for the conversation about how to expand newsroom diversity, when 17% of newsroom employees are minority journalists, we are trying to stave off a challenge to our existence. The Beaver County Times and the Elwood City Ledger in Beaver and Lawrence County, PA. Journalists are the eyes, ears, and voice of the people we serve. We sit at the school board meetings so you know who the next principal will be. We attend the town council meetings so you know which company is building in your backyard. From the Delaware County Daily Times in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania. Opinions are not fake news. The editorials and op-eds we write and publish are just that, opinion. We sometimes endorse candidates based on the information we have and who we think will best serve our community. You may agree with us or you may not. That's okay. Our job is to provide you with the facts so you can form your own opinion and make your own informed decisions. From the Elizabethtown Advocate in Elizabethtown, PA. If these threats of violence escalate to a point where journalists are afraid to do their job of holding government accountable, the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution will be as meaningless as Article 125 of the Soviet Constitution of 1936. From the Providence Journal in Providence, Rhode Island, "Without this window into the workings of government, our democratic republic would cease to work, leaving elected leaders without a needed check on their power." Wow. From the Dallas Morning News in Dallas, Texas, "We see this as dangerous for the simple reason that by diminishing the press, those who hold high office gain a greater ability to govern without the steadying force of public scrutiny. That's a recipe not for empowering this president, but rather for ensuring that our leaders in Washington fall out of touch with the people and decide that they know better than the people they seek to govern." Ah. From the Commons newspaper in Brattleboro, Vermont, "The biggest injustice of Trump's smear the press presumes that a Trump supporter cannot and will not think critically and fairly about their news. The president's supporters deserve to be held to a higher standard." From Real Change News in Seattle, Washington, "There has never been a more critical time to engage in free speech, with our words, our time, our money, and our bodies in the streets." The Washington Newspaper Publishers Association in Port Townsend, Washington, "Our free press supports the rights of people expressing every imaginable political viewpoint. It's not fake. It is very real, and it's time our president recognized and supported this very basic and central concept of our democracy." From Kenosha News in Kenosha, Wisconsin, "Presenting news that you disagree with is not fake news. We work hard to inform, serving as watchdogs of government and institutions, while also celebrating the good in the community. This has been going on for decades." You can find all this online, and I wish you would. The foreword. "American Jews, like all other minorities, have a special stake in maintaining an independent press to ensure that our voices are heard at any time, in any language." The Guardian, London, United Kingdom. "Press freedom was not invented in the United States, but there are few nations in which the importance of an independent press has been so closely woven into its long history. This great American tradition of civic respect for truth and truth-telling is now under threat." From the New Yorker, "Because Trump knows little about policy or history, it is tempting to imagine that he knows nothing at all. This is a mistake. He knows well that the American press is hardly popular and in many ways is on the defensive." And from the Sentinel of Gloucester County in Malaga, New Jersey, "The job of a reporter is not about glamour and makeup like you often see on television. The majority of reporters and journalists work part-time and make under 30 grand a year. They usually receive no additional benefits. To lump all reporters and journalists in the same boat as the enemy of the people is certainly not an accurate statement." Now, like I say, it in the print issue of the New York Times that I receive every morning, these comments covered the entire left section. The if you open the paper, the left-hand page. And it's worth reading. Some of the newspapers who participated, the Times only listed their names. But most of the papers who participated have their comments, their editorial comments in this article. And again, I never thought such a thing would be necessary. This declaration of the importance of a free press. Now, I know the demagogues and the Nazis and the American fascists will borrow the language of the First Amendment, borrow the language of freedom and justice, and corrupt it and pollute it and twist it to a point where it's unrecognizable, because they twist it into support of fascism, into support of destroying the First Amendment. And to me, that's where the greatest danger lies. We have to be self-educated enough and aware enough to tell the difference. To tell the difference between an editorial in a legitimate paper and the vomitous, screeching rants of someone like Alex Jones or Breitbart or Sean Hannity or anybody in the Fox sewer. The sad part of that is so many people have lost the ability to make that distinction, because they have had 20 years of grinding from the Fox sewer channel and from the pro-fascists' writings of people now on the internet. Now, Trump responded to this already. This is what was in the Washington Post. Trump on Thursday assailed the media for editorials in newspapers across the country that championed the freedom of the press, which was produced as a unified response in the face of the president's relentless attacks. In a series of morning Twitter posts, Mr. Trump said the Boston Globe was, quote, in collusion, end quote, with other newspapers for leading the editorial effort, choosing a word, of course, that has become synonymous with the special counsel's investigation into Russian election interference, an investigation that he has repeatedly called a witch hunt and a hoax. Trump also, in one of his messages, added, prove it, though it was not clear what he meant. You're an asshole. Prove it. You're one too. Oh, your mother wears combat boots. Prove it. So does your mother. Jesus Christ. In a subsequent tweet this morning, he wrote that he was in favor of, quote, true freedom of the press. But he repeated his accusations that most of the news produced was fake or pushing a particular political agenda. Early in the morning, this morning, Trump also called, quote, the fake news media the opposition party. The president has called on the press the enemy of the people and rallied his supporters to speak out against the news media directive critics have said could lead to violence against journalists. Earlier this month, a senior editor at the Globe proposed that newspapers publish editorials about the dangers of the administration's assault on the press. Trump took a swipe at the Globe this morning by noting that the New York Times company had sold the paper at a steep loss, though he incorrectly said that the price had been a dollar. The Times company sold the Globe and other properties for $70 million in 2013 after having paid $1.1 billion two decades before. The president's tweets came a day after the White House announced that Mr. Trump had taken the unprecedented step of revoking security clearance of one of his biggest critics, John Brennan, former CIA director. Brennan said the president's actions was an attempt to silence him and a warning to others who speak out against him and his administration's policies. Brennan said, quote, Mr. Trump's claims of no collusion are, in a word, hogwash, end quote. And the rest of it is about this mad fucker in the White House threatening to revoke the security clearances of other former intelligence and government leaders in this country and law enforcement. Jesus. I probably should write it, but I'm too busy trying to finish this book. Because you can't really, I can't anyway, I can't just sit here and spontaneously come up with all the reasons that Trump all the ways that Trump is destroying deliberately and consciously what's left of this Democratic Republic and the possibility of repairing it when this pig is gone, and he will be gone eventually. I don't know how to spontaneously talk about the damage that he's doing and continues to do. Because what happens, as soon as I'll have I'll probably have 10, 12, 15 articles in front of me gleaned from the fake news that I will reference or quote directly from during one of these podcasts. But here's what I found. And this is the truth. Every time Scott Van Dusen says, and now from the Daniel Scappin Studio, every time Scott Van Dusen starts his introduction, I say to myself, try to contain yourself, Malloy. Try this time to see if you can go 1 minute without saying fuck or some other line of profanity about what you're going to be talking about today. And I try. I do try for all of maybe 20 seconds. But then the stuff that I sit here and talk about or report on or try to share with you, gleaned from the reportings of legitimate America-loving journalists, what I read that they put together, it starts. It starts a fire inside of me. And at some point in those first few minutes of every one of these podcasts, I just think to myself, the standard questions, you probably have them too. How did this happen? Now, there are dozens of answers to that, but I'm asking it more from a theoretical standpoint, or from a standpoint of how could this have happened? You understand what I'm saying? But I say to everything, how did this happen to us? And then the fire spreads, and then I start screaming, and then I start with the vile language and the insults against these monsters, as if what I do in this little 2-hour podcast has any meaning or effect at all. And I know it doesn't. But I just want you to know that, you know, I do make the effort. I do. I strive to try to keep a lid on it. But I have lost that ability. I can't do it. I feel sometimes similar to this. If I came home and found somebody in my house with my wife and daughter tied to a chair and the person's holding a gun, and my choices would be to try to talk that person into putting the gun down or attacking him with every fiber in my body. Now, I know what I would do. And that's how I feel about this filthy president, this degenerate man who is infecting not just us. This is the horrible part. He is giving permission. I read in the Times today, and I may get to it second hour, that the fascist leader of Austria, or is it Hungary? I'll have to take a look. But all of a sudden, the Trump administration, where is it? Damn it. This just blew me away. That the Trump administration is now showing great respect to this fascist leader who just took over. I'll have to find it. Austria or Hungary, damn it, I'll have to find it. But it just blew me away. It just blew me away. And the fascist leader of the country that I'm having trouble remembering which one it was crowing about the fact that Trump had given him his blessing. So the virus that is Trump, the poison that is Trump, is not just making this country sick. It's making other countries sick. God damn it, I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it. But I'm still hung up on what happened yesterday, like I think most people would be, if you're rational, that the President of the United States used the power that comes with that office to attack a former director of the CIA, John Brennan. It's just staggering. And he's proud of himself for doing it. Yeah, here it is. Hungary grins at pivot by Trump administration. Others grimace. Prime Minister Viktor Orban, the fascist of Hungary, has craved validation from Washington and seems to be getting it from the Trump administration. This is so in keeping with what Trump does. He will single out these fascist dictators and praise them. And the leaders of representative government and democracies, he says they're chiselers and cheaters. Jesus Christ. All right, we'll take a break and come back. Stick around for hour two of this podcast. I'm Mike Malloy. Yeah, we should just give this hour over to listening to Aretha Franklin, shouldn't we? Before I get to this bit about Hungary, which you may or may not be interested in, it's just another indication of how the planet, a lot of the leadership on this planet is following Trump's lead and going totally fascist. But what I mentioned last hour, the whole list of newspaper publishers who together today published editorials about freedom of the press, what the press really does, and the fact that Trump's bullshit about fake news is just that, bullshit, and that he's leading his hardcore followers right into a quicksand of shit, and they're going to drown in it. It's unbelievable. But this afternoon, I have two items that were posted this afternoon that I've got to share with you just to show you how unhinged this crazy son of a bitch has become. Trump, listen, a new report. Well, that's the name of the book, Unhinged, Omarosa's book. And boy, is she working him like a fucking yo-yo. I mean, I bow down to Omarosa. I really do. If there was anybody on earth who could strip this son of a bitch down to his bones, Omarosa is proving that she's the one. And how effective has she been? Listen, a new report from Vanity Fair claims that Trump now wants to see Omarosa arrested. Arrested over her recently published book. According to sources in this Vanity Fair article, quote, Trump told advisors, screamed at advisors, that he wants Attorney General Jeff Sessions to have Manigault Newman arrested, despite the fact that it's unclear what law Trump believes she broke. Well, she broke the most important law in Trump's universe. She didn't bow down to Trump. One former Trump White House official, who for obvious reasons is going to remain unnamed, said that Trump's unhinged, there it is again, fury at Omarosa was setting him on a, quote, death spiral. Oh, please, please. Similar to the one that engulfed his campaign in the summer of 2016 when he went after the Gold Star father who criticized this son of a bitch's proposal to ban all Muslims trying to enter the United States. Two former White House officials also tell the writer at Vanity Fair that Omarosa has been masterful in the rollout of her book, as it seems every move is designed purposefully to make Trump go off his fucking nut. And it's working. It's working. One official said, quote, she's doing everything perfect if her ultimate goal is to troll Trump. She's driving him right to the brink. Keep going, Omarosa. Keep going. He has been furiously attacking Omarosa. I mean, is there a derogatory term that he hasn't used yet? And as far as the use of the N-word is concerned, you bet your ass she has it on tape. Or somebody does. But she's accused him of being racist and in mental decline. Well, just watch him. Just listen to him. He wants her arrested. What an insane fuck does he really... apparently he believes that he can order Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, this former Klansman and white supremacist and segregationist without parallel, who is now the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, to go arrest someone for publishing a book. But this is what Trump world would look like if this son of a bitch is not peacefully and legally removed from office. Jesus Christ, this guy is sick. Now, also posted at Washington Post website this afternoon is a very quick piece here by a man named William McRaven. He is a retired Navy admiral. He was commander of the U.S. Joint Special Operations Command from 2011 to 2014. He oversaw the 2011 Navy SEAL raid in Pakistan that killed Osama bin Laden. This is what he has posted at the Washington Post. Mr. President, former CIA Director John Brennan, whose security clearance you revoked on Wednesday, is one of the finest public servants I have ever known. Few Americans have done more to protect this country than John. He is a man of unparalleled integrity, whose honesty and character have never been in question, except by those who don't know him. Therefore, I would consider it an honor if you would revoke my security clearance as well, so I can add my name to the list of men and women who have spoken up against your presidency. Like most Americans, I had hoped that when you became president, you would rise to the occasion and become the leader this great nation needs. A good leader tries to embody the best qualities of his or her organization. A good leader sets the example for others to follow. A good leader always puts the welfare of others before himself or herself. Your leadership, however, has shown little of these qualities. Through your actions, you have embarrassed us in the eyes of our children, humiliated us on the world stage, and worst of all, divided us as a nation. If you think for a moment that your McCarthy-era tactics will suppress the voices of criticism, you are sadly mistaken. The criticism will continue until you become the leader we prayed you would be. Which, I'm sorry, Admiral, that means the criticism will continue ad infinitum. Trump is not a leader, well, you pointed out in your letter to him. He has no leadership qualities. He's a goddamn thug. He's a grifter. He's a liar. He's a cheap little fuck who couldn't lead himself out of a dark closet. Oh, my God, I hate this guy. Now, this is what's needed. This is a four-star Marine, Navy, Admiral, Commander of the U.S. Joint Special Operations Command from 2011 to 2014. Now, if he said this while he was on active duty, he would be fired and possibly put in a brig. But he is no longer in the Navy. But this is what it takes. I'm waiting for more. I mean, where are more people, more leaders, men and women who have gone through the hell of, and this is part of it, some of the misguided directions that this country has ordered them to go through. But they went. And now they take a look at this piece of dreck that sits in the Oval Office. I hope more speak out. I hope more speak out.
What's his name?
Huh?
What was his name again?
His name is William McRaven. MC, capital RAVEN. William McRaven. There's a press release here from Kevin Zeese, who I met a couple of years ago at an organizational rally in Washington, D.C., right before the Occupy movement started. Kevin Geese is married to Margaret Flowers, who is a pediatrician. And the two of them are two of the most dedicated activists in this country. You very seldom see their names, Kevin Geese or Margaret Flowers, but they're there. This press release comes from him. CNBC is reporting that President Donald Trump's military parade is estimated to cost $92 million, citing a U.S. defense official with firsthand knowledge of the assessment. This is a massive increase in the estimated cost, which was $12 million. The parade is scheduled for November 10th in Washington, D.C., and will feature armored vehicles, aircraft flyovers, and period uniforms. A network of 200 organizations has come together to organize a mass protest against the military parade in November, called for by Trump. The military parade is widely opposed. Army Times conducted a poll of its readers. 51,000 readers of Army Times responded, and 89% said, no, it's a waste of money, and the troops are too busy. A Quinnipiac University poll found 61% of voters disapprove of the military parade, while only 26% support the idea. So the national consensus is there should not be a military parade. Now, there's a website that we'll put this up. Kathy, you'll put this up on our website, right? It's simply www.notrumpmilitaryparade.us, capital U, capital S. No Trump Military Parade dot capital U, capital S. Please check it out, please. The organizations, Kevin goes on, signed on to a letter that calls for the parade to be stopped. Saying, quote, we reject this gross display of power and violence. We call on you to stop the military parade. If the parade goes forward, the organizations will urge their members to come to Washington, D.C. to protest the parade or to organize sister protests in their communities. Urge organizations you are a member of to sign on. This is an issue that impacts the economy, jobs, the environment, as well as war and militarism. The website again, notrumpmilitaryparade.us. U.S. is capitalized. This unconscionable prick doing this, who the fuck does this except fascist wannabe or fascist dictators? Kim Jong-un does it. Putin does it. The Soviets used to do it. All sorts of fascist countries do it. God damn, are we going to let this happen? I mean, when? Are we going to make this stop? When? Now, here's a couple of items that that Trump, if he were a leader, if he was not the insane narcissistic prick that he is, if he had any qualities that are those qualities that one assumes a person who becomes president of the United States should have. If he had one iota of compassion, if he had the tiniest bit of understanding of how bigoted groups in this country can hurt people, then he would respond, I have two articles here. You know what he'll say about this? Not a fucking word. The first one, the Orlando Sentinel newspaper reports this. A six-year-old black boy with dreadlocks was turned away from his Florida elementary Christian school because his hairstyle was banned. Now, there's a picture of this kid at rawstory.com. I don't think you could find a cuter, more natural-looking little boy than this kid. His hair is probably half as long as our daughter Molly's. It's neat. It's clean. Little kid has a tie on. He's got his books. And this filthy, punk shit fucking Christian school told him to go away. 6 years old. Clinton Stanley Jr. was to attend a Books Christian Academy in Apopka, Florida, but he was told that he was unwelcome because of his hair. The boy's father said, quote, I respect their rules, but it's not right. Allow kids to come as they are. You are a Christian school. In the Bible, it says, come as you are. You deny a kid an education because of his hair? Mr. Stanley Sr., just between you and me, I realize here that the little boy now goes to a public school. But Mr. Stanley, you should get as far away from these Christian slave-owning fucks as you can. Why would you send your child to a school that follows a religion that says slaves should shut the fuck up and honor their master? That's Christianity. No offense, Mr. Clinton, but Mr. Stanley, but Jesus Christ, so to speak, I think you can do better for your boy. The administrator of the public school or the private school said the rules banning natural black hair have been in place since the academy was founded in 1971. She said, no dreads. All of our boys have short hair. We don't allow it. We never have. Why? Because it makes them look too, you know, colored? The administrator complained about getting what she calls harassing phone calls. She said, quote, I've had all kinds of obscene, ugly calls. It's just hard. Well, bitch, how do you think the little boy feels? And his parents. Why do you perpetrate this shit, you white Christian? Dad was using a voucher to send, you know, one of the pieces of shit that, what's her name, the new Secretary of Education, likes to put in the hands of, you know, underserved minorities. He was using a voucher to send his son to the private school. And he said the racist policy appears to be targeted at hoodlums. He said, quote, you're disassociating yourself from people of color. The school, by the way, also discusses banning gay students. And most of the teachers in this shithole of a school don't have college-educated teachers, and they use the Bible to teach science class. Mr. Stanley, for fuck's sake, get your kid out of there. He won't be educated. The boy is now attending a public school. Christians. Jesus Christ. And then here's the second one. This is from the Times. A 12-year-old now, student in a small Oklahoma town near the Texas border, was targeted in an inflammatory social media post by the parents of a classmate, leading to violent threats and driving officials of the school to close the school for 2 days. The 12-year-old is a transgender student. It all started on Facebook. Jamie Crenshaw, whose children attend public schools in the town, complained in a private Facebook group for students' parents that the transgender girl, Maddie, was using a bathroom for girls. She wrote on her Facebook last week, quote, "The transgender is already using the girls' bathroom. We've been told how the school has gone above and beyond to make sure he has his own bathroom, yet he is still using the girls. Really? Looks like it's going to be a long year." This child, Maddie, usually uses one of the faculty restrooms. But on August 8th, her first day in seventh grade, she used the girls' bathroom because she was in a new building and she didn't yet know where the faculty bathrooms were. That's according to her mother, Brandy Rose. The Facebook group, Achille, I guess that's the name of the town in Pennsylvania, or in Oklahoma. It's spelled A-C-H-I-L-L-E. I'm not sure how they pronounce it. Achille, let's say Achille. The Facebook group, Achille ISD Parents, Independent School District Parents, which is not affiliated with the school, appears to have been taken down. But screen grabs of Ms. Crenshaw's original post and the resulting vicious comments were shared widely online. The Crenshaws didn't respond to messages or return calls or question and comment. Maddie said that now she's afraid to sleep alone at night. But even though she's scared, she says she wants to remain in public school. She said in an interview yesterday or on Tuesday, quote, "I'm going to keep my head held up high and stay strong and go to school and won't let those bullies drag me down." It's a 12-year-old. Bernie Crenshaw, spelled B-U-R-N-E-Y, Bernie Crenshaw, that's the husband of the bitch who started this, shared a screenshot of her post on his Facebook page, which is also no longer visible online, which generated hundreds of additional comments, according to Miss Rose. Now, Miss Rose is the child's mother. The mother said, quote, "You would expect children to bully other children, but these are adults bullying a child and threatening a child, and they're claiming to be doing it in the name of God. Here we fucking go again." So Miss Brandy says, "How in the world is that Christ-like?" Oh, ma'am, with all due respect, do you honestly fucking believe that Christians these days are anything but bigoted, lying, troublemaking, excluding, nasty sons of bitches who would burn everybody alive who isn't like them? Come on. One man whose profile picture showed a family, one of these racist little homophobic bastards, wrote, "Let Parker," now who is Parker? Oh, Parker is the, I guess, the principal or the founder of this shithole of a school. The man wrote, "Let Parker whip his ass until he quits coming to school." People reacted to that post 16 times with the like button and the laughing emoji. A website that aims to stop hate crimes documented several other posts and published the personal information of individual posters. One man called for castrating the 12-year-old boy with, quote, "a good sharp knife," end quote. Another suggested telling other children to beat her up in the bathroom so, quote, "it won't want to come back." It won't want to come back. These are Christians. It was unclear how many of the offensive comments were from Akil residents. Most of them appeared to be from people who live outside the county, said the sheriff, who's investigating all this. The sheriff said of the community, quote, "so far I've seen a lot of support for Maddie," but he added that "a small percentage has been negative. That's why we're taking this very serious," end quote. Mom obtained an order of protection against Crenshaw, the bastard, the husband that started this shit. After Mom said he blocked her in the road on Friday morning and verbally assaulted her about Maddie. Blocked her in the road shortly after they dropped their children off at school. Earlier this year, Mom said that this Crenshaw fuck confronted Miss Rose's husband at a father-daughter dance that he had attended with Maddie. At the sheriff's suggestion, Akil Public Schools shut down on Monday and Tuesday as a preventive measure to protect children in the event of big protests. Small demonstrations both supporting and opposing transgender rights were held on Tuesday, and the school reopened on Wednesday. Rick Bean, the superintendent of Akil Public Schools, which have about 360 students, said in an interview on Tuesday that he had held a staff meeting after receiving hundreds of messages about the episode. Mr. Bean said, quote, "what we decided is that we need to be more educated, not so much for anything that we did as a staff, but for what we didn't do." He went ahead then and hired a hall monitor to make sure that nobody, like maybe Maddie, is bullied, to make sure she isn't. Mr. Bean, who's Mr. Bean? Mr. Bean is the superintendent of the public schools. This is what Mr. Bean said. "Let's go back to the basics here. Did Jesus want to protect children?" Well, he said, "such is the kingdom of heaven, Mr. Bean," so I guess you know the answer. A retired police officer in Oklahoma and longtime activist on behalf of transgender people in the state, Paula Schonauer, said, quote, "in Oklahoma, all transgender people are invisible to the law." That means, you know, what the fuck business is it of yours if a child believes himself or herself to be of a certain gender? What is it your business? Lisa Del Cole, a board member for the Oklahoma City chapter of PFLAG, that's the families of lesbian, gay, and transgender people. She wrote a letter to the Akil School District urging it to publicly denounce the violent Facebook comments that were directed at this child and her parents. Lisa Del Cole said fear of others is part of what drives such poison, such vitriol. She wrote, "there's such an us versus them mentality in this nation." Yeah, and we know where it comes from, don't we? And she added, "I will tell you as a parent, this is terrifying. Words really matter," she added. "They're powerful, and we can use them for good or we can use them to tear each other down." Oh, my God. Protections for transgender children who were allowed to use bathrooms corresponding with their gender identity, that went completely out the fucking window with the assumption of the presidency by this half-baked son of a bitch Trump, with the help of the half-baked son of a bitch Putin. Mrs. Crenshaw, that's the bitch who started this. Her original post set off comments in part because she accused Maddie of, quote, looking over the stalls in the girls' bathroom. How the fuck would this woman know? Mom said, Maddie would never do such a thing. My daughter has to lean very far forward to use the bathroom, the toilet. I guess someone saw her leaning forward and decided she was trying to look under the stall. But the bitch who started this said over the stall, which means the bitch who started this is a lying fucking Christian. Maddie and her family moved to Oklahoma a couple of years ago for what the family wanted to be a fresh start. Mom said after Maddie was assaulted and she and her older brother were taunted to commit suicide in their former school district in Texas. Where do kids learn this? Where do kids learn racism? Where do kids learn fucked up religions? Where do they learn it? They're not born with it. When they arrived at Akeel Public Schools, Maddie was already living as a girl. She hadn't intended to be publicly open about being transgender, Mom said. Then last week, Maddie was pushed into the national spotlight. Mom said she has no choice now. Mom said, out of everyone in her family, Maddie is the most religious. Mom said she, quote, prays for people she doesn't even know. Mom said, we call her our prayer warrior. All these people are saying she needs Jesus. Well, she has Jesus. End quote, Mom. On Tuesday morning, more than two dozen people marched through a pouring rain wearing sparkly silver duct tape across their mouths in a silent show of support for Maddie. A similar number of counter-protesters assembled elsewhere, but left when it started to rain. Oh, shit, we can't get wet. T.J. Pierce, a parent in nearby Durant, Oklahoma, who organized the silent march, said the posts about Maddie were, quote, wrong on so many levels. He said, it's not about the fact that this child is transgender. It's about the fact that it's a child. Kathy, you want to give me a break here? I'll be back in a moment. Stick around.
At work, I just take time. And all through my coffee break time. Break time.
Has caused these massive wildfires, the worst in California's history, that are still burning. We now know the cause. Arson? Nah. Lightning strikes? Nah. Campfires left burning? Nah. See, these fires strike California every year, but it's obvious at this point they're getting worse. They're killing more people, uprooting communities. And who is to blame? Well, Ryan Zinke did a radio interview with Breitbart News, that shithole of a lying fascist propaganda machine. And during that interview, Zinke said that the fires are caused by environmental terrorist groups. Yes! Yes! And they're preventing the government from managing forests. And they're responsible for the severity of the fires. Fire scientists and forestry experts say climate change is the main factor behind the problem. But to the Trump fascist, climate change doesn't exist. That's a plot by liberals to force everybody to learn Chinese. A spokesman for the Department of Interior, or a spokeswoman, doesn't matter to these people, I guess, Faith Vandervoort, said in an email, quote, "There have been a number of instances where environmental groups have submitted petitions to the Bureau of Land Management halting companies from removing dead and dying timber until the Bureau of Land Management can sort through each petition point. These actions halt proper forest management and leave the West vulnerable to incredible devastation." Oh, those dirty fucking environmentalists, right? Let's string them up. But Monica Turner, an ecologist, University of Wisconsin-Madison, said, I'm paraphrasing, that this is bullshit. That's not what she said. She said, quote, "Making minor changes in the fuels, which you then have to do repeatedly for many years, is not going to solve the bigger problem. You know, getting rid of the twigs and shit is not going to solve the bigger problem of having to face climate change. We cannot clear our way or thin our way out of this problem," end quote. Jesus. Now, the truth is, and it is just truth, that the devastation, the loss of life, the loss of property, homes burning, you've seen the pictures, that's gotten worse. Because people who insist on living in this wildland-urban interface, you know, communities that are right up against natural areas, we live up against a natural area. But we get so goddamn much rain here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains that we don't have to concern ourselves about tinder dry forestry that is going to ignite. And I wouldn't say we live in an urban natural interface. This is North Georgia, so we have lots of natural woodlands still around, even in the city of Atlanta. Even with all the development that's gone on in Atlanta, it's still, when you approach through the air, it still appears to be what it was described as 50 years ago, a city in a forest. But I digress. A forest management expert told the Washington Post, quote, "While these fires are a tragedy, it's also an opportunity to rethink our fire policies on a broader level, as well as how and where we build our homes. Climate change is changing so much, not just where we build our homes. Who doesn't want to live where you're near or next to or can see a natural setting like a forest, while at the same time insist, as Americans will, on having nearby the conveniences of malls and superstores and grocery stores and so on and so forth. The only way to accomplish that is to build right up against these wild areas. Wednesday morning, or was it Tuesday morning? After I had fixed Molly breakfast, and I let the dogs out, our two dogs, and I brought them back in. I was sitting out on the back porch, and I've described this before. Our backyard butts up against a huge forestry area. There are houses around, you know, not in the forest, on lots. And then across the street from our house is a huge forestry area that is part of Mercer University. They call it Mercer Forest. It's a wild natural habitat. And a creek, a stream, runs alongside about 25 yards from our property under the street and then weaves its way into Mercer Forest. North Georgia, Atlanta, has hundreds, if not thousands, of these streams. A lot of them have been filled in and destroyed by developers, but a lot of them still exist, and they attract wildlife. We have more red-tailed hawks in our neighborhood than I can count. There is not a week goes by that I don't see two or three or six deer coming out the forest behind our house, crossing the road, going to the forest on the other side. But Tuesday morning, the dogs were inside, and all of a sudden they just went batshit, barking, both of them, and yelping and screeching. I thought they were having a nervous breakdown. And I looked outside, and loping across that area next to the creek was one of the biggest coyotes I've ever seen. I mean, at first I thought, no, that's not a wolf. Well, no, it wasn't. This was a very thin coyote, but huge. About the size, I guess, of a German Shepherd, although coyotes have longer legs than German Shepherds. But this creature was oversized for coyotes. We've seen coyotes out here a lot, but they're usually small. They're a little bit bigger than foxes, but this guy. So I watched him, and with our two dogs barking their asses off inside our house, he never once looked up. I mean, it's like he didn't give a shit, like, oh, a couple of domestic dogs, BFD. And he kept loping, and I saw him go through the drain tunnel under the road, the creek tunnel. It's not a drain tunnel, but a creek tunnel that was built to preserve the creek under the road. And I watched him go in there, and it's about however wide a suburban street is, and then it comes out the other side, and he was gone. So even in urban areas, I mean, you don't have to live in the West to have this interface with the wild. I mean, you can get it. You know, Atlanta is a metro area of about 6 million. That doesn't mean shit. We have black bears out here too. Not near our house, but within 5-6 miles of our house. So we have deer, bear, wild hogs, red-tailed hawks, rabbits. I mean, just all sorts of wildlife. Is that good or is that bad? Is it indication that we humans are building in places where we shouldn't be? Is it an indication that wildlife is panicked, doesn't know what to do, and is trying to coexist with us? I don't have any answers. We also have national forests, just like out west. We have a tremendous number, a tremendous amount of acreage, hundreds of thousands of acres that are in national forests just a bit north of the Daniel Scaffin studio here. I mean, you don't have to drive more than 45, 50 minutes north of here, and you enter Chattahoochee National Forest, or there's several of them. So it's still relatively speaking, a natural habitat that we live in here in Atlanta. But what they're talking about with this urban wildland interface is entirely different from what I'm describing here. And when you add into what's being faced out west, this drought that has been going on in one form or another, just interminably, it seems like, in California and parts of the West, and global warming, which brings violent thunderstorms, which brings massive amounts of lightning, which starts horrific fires. But Zinke got on television, the NBC affiliate KCRA, and said, quote, "This has nothing to do with climate change. This has to do with active forest management." And Zinke's capable of doing that? Shit. However, research shows, and these people don't care about research or science, it doesn't exist. Scientific research shows that human-caused climate change is a primary factor behind the recent increase in fire severity. A 2016 study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
What's that? Some fake news place?
Found that the heat and drought brought about by climate change was responsible for doubling the amount of land burned in the western United States between 1984 and 2015 when the study ended. The study, or a professor of Environmental and Political Science, University of California, Santa Barbara, said, quote, told the Washington Post, quote, "There's a broad effort to deny the science of climate change and its links to the horrible wildfires in California, and it's just not accurate. I don't think the scale of reducing fuel load, you know, the underbrush, is a realistic policy proposal that would magically stop fires in the western United States. Forests burn, and it's going to get a lot worse unless we do something about climate change." And environmental groups, as to be expected, took issue with the labeling of them as terrorist groups, right? Ethan Manuel, director of the Lands Protection Program at the Sierra Club, said, quote, "Zinke's inability to understand basic fire science is leading him to turn to dangerous and inflammatory statements. We do think we need to do sensible forest management, but this should be driven by science and practicality, which doesn't seem to be a priority for this secretary." It's not a priority for anybody in this gangster administration. You remember what Trump tweeted last week? Quote, "California wildfires are being magnified and made so much worse by the bad environmental laws, which aren't allowing massive amounts of readily available water to be properly utilized. It's being diverted into the Pacific Ocean. Must also tree clear to stop fire from spreading." Tree clear, you ignorant fucking savage, you. And as far as water being diverted into the Pacific Ocean, who could possibly make a statement like that? There's only one person in America that has the bully pulpit who could make a statement like that. The most ignorant son of a bitch in the country, Donald Trump. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit, but don't let it get out of hand. I'm Mike Malloy.